Art of Innovation, Chicago Innovation Awards. I guess I don't know why I call it Chicago Innovation Awards anymore. It's Chicago Innovation. Everyone knows. ChicagoInnovation.com. Anyway, January 24th, they're hosting their next monthly event, Art of Innovation, at the School of Art Institute of Chicago. I highly recommend you check it out. It's I think it's interesting that Chicago Innovation does things themed more on like the type of person who would want to go rather than the topic. Most places it's like this is this kind of app, doggy apps versus whatever, health food, insurtech, whatever. They're more of like ageless innovators, which, you know, obviously these people are old as shit, but like it's still effective and still good and a really good event. In fact, I don't categorize myself as very old, but I definitely went to the event and enjoyed it very thoroughly. Howard Tolman is speaking at this one as well. He's, if you know him, former CEO of 1871, very big into the art community. He spoke at the last event. I don't know if this is going to be a regular thing for him or not, but either way, it was fantastic. So highly recommend you check it out. Go to ChicagoInnovation.com. You can find the event on there. Make sure you use Technori as a promo code. Save yourself some money because who doesn't like to save money? If you haven't figured it out, I'm Scott Catoon. I'm your host. This is the Technori Podcast. We've got a great show for you. John Dillon, the CEO of Guardian Vets, is going to be joining me on the show. Great conversation. John and I mean, you couldn't find two people who find each other more like see eye to eye. He's a unit economics guy. He spent the former part of his career at KPMG on global infrastructure. I don't know if I say this on the show often, but like I have my own ulterior motives on the shows. And in a lot of cases, those motives are, I guess, selfishly, I like to see what makes people tick and then try to identify. This is just a game I play. And I don't know, for investors out there, this is probably a game you should try playing. I like to see where those certain lessons and methodologies manifest themselves in the business from the person. And in this case, it was real evident from John to me that, like, you'll find out when you listen, but he didn't tell me that he was a global infrastructure project manager type person, and it just sort of came out in the way that he started Guardian Vets and how he's built it into a real, really big company. It's a Chicago Innovation, speaking of Chicago Innovation, it's a Chicago Innovation Award winner, which like 97% of those companies that have won an award are still in business, and he's one of them. Hundreds of partners, whatever, I don't know what he said the number, 600,000 clients or something like that using the platform. So growing really quickly. You'll learn more about it when he talks, obviously. But Guardian Vets, we had Hema from Pediasaurus on, and it's a place for, this is a couple weeks ago, and it's a place for parents to go and talk and learn more about problems that kids have and know whether or not they should take them to the ER. And the long story short is you save money on not going to the ER. Well, the same thing is said with pets. If you know me, I've got a pet, Boo Ray, love Boo Ray. But we spent a lot of money on taking Boo Ray in unnecessarily. And so yada, yada, yada. We get into all kinds of like sophistication of the market and whatever stuff that you definitely, I don't know why I yada, yada'd my own show, but I just did. You guys will definitely get a kick out of it. But the bottom line is, the moral of the interview is that successful operation of company, regardless of what it is, comes down to, as a CEO or leader, finding your way, finding the best way to run whatever company it might be. And in this case, in my case, it's unit economics. In John's case, that's the same thing. We nerded out a little bit on it. But anyway, I want to make sure to add to this conversation that we also do Twitter polls and things like that. And before we did the show, I did a little Twitter poll. As a pet owner, what is your greatest fear? 0% said leaving them alone. 44% said sudden sickness. 56% said them going missing. I'm deathly afraid of all three, but ironically, my dog has an anxiety issue. And the only thing I'm worried about is leaving him alone, as in I can't. He's not been alone in like 6 years. So it's funny to me that once again in life, I find myself standing by myself. So I didn't vote on my own poll because I'm an idiot, but I would vote and it would say 1% or whatever the appropriate number would be. Leave them alone is me. So if you are interested in our polls and interested in being, you know, interactive, you should follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and wherever else at Technori. And that's what you should do. So before we get to John, we'd like to check the mailbag. Who doesn't like to go through their inbox? Well, coming off of the holiday, maybe nobody does because there's like 8,000 things that were stuck in the inbox. But I do like to check the inbox. And speaking of social, you can hit us on DM if you want to keep this, you know, between you and I, or if you want to email us, hello@technori, we'll get there. hello@technori.com. Or like I said, DM me at Catoon or at Technori on all these same things, Instagram, whatever. We can read your name. You just tell me if you don't want your name read, but you know, otherwise I'm going to read it, or your username. In this case, it's Sharish 1985. The question that she asked, is, it's a good one, and I think I've got an answer for her. So if she's listening, I appreciate the email. We love feedback from people, so please send us your feedback as well as ask us questions, whether it's wanting to know about a company that you heard on the show or you didn't hear, or wanting intros or whatever. I'm down to do whatever, man. This show's for you. I'm a poor media person. I don't make no money at this. I make it elsewhere. So by all means, reach out to us. Here's her question. She's looking for an app that would help her find a playmate or play date for her kid based on location. New parents, which I'm to be one, we tend to meet people who have kids, and so they can play as well. And she couldn't find any apps that do that as now. So here's the gist. I mean, I don't speak for her. I'll speak for myself. I'm a little bit of an introvert. If you don't know this about me, I hate people. I can't stand the idea that, like, I can just imagine, like, setting up a play date with a stranger. This reminds me of Tinder for kids, minus the nasty part. Like, get your mind out of the gutter. I don't mean it that way. Just the swiping for friendship thing. The idea that a kid pairs up with another kid who has a parent present, presumably. What if my kid hates that kid? And what is almost a certainty is I'm going to hate that kid's parent. Then I probably won't like the kid either. So, like, this is like a nightmare for me. So I hope that my kid doesn't have this. So I don't want an app like this. But here's what I will tell you. There are apps that are similar to this that help me as an introvert and a person who doesn't usually like people that much get through this. And this is the deal. One such app, they've been on Technori Show many times, pitched on stage, equity crowdfunded, raised about $500,000 doing so. Desiree Vargas Wrigley is the founder of a company called Parachute for Kids. And what it is basically like ClassPass for kids. If you're a parent, you know this. Your kid wants to be one day I want to be a ballerina. And then you go for like 7 minutes of it and you're like, I don't want to be a ballerina. And then you've wasted all your money on an annual subscription for a ballerina class and nobody ever goes. So you can go on Parachute and list those things and find places and classes and different events and things for kids that you can just drop into. And maybe you buy the rest of the subscription and your kid becomes a ballerina. I don't know why a ballerina talks that way, but whatever. The ballerina can be. You can enable your child to be a ballerina by dropping into the Parachute classes, or you can just use it to meet up with people and do other things for children. And so to you, SHIrish1985, if you are more social than I am, which it appears that you are, then I think that there are other apps out there that are for like matchmaking for kids. But I would say if I wanted to be more safe and secure and not meet up Craigslist style with a stranger, using his child as bait. Sorry, I'm that sicko who goes there that quickly. But if you want to avoid that, I recommend starting off by going to events, different things that are like in a public place with like a payment thing and like information exchange, that kind of deal. Check out Parachute for Kids. I think you'll get a big kick out of it. So that's what I got for you. Today's show is brought to you by MB Real Estate. That's where we do our real estating. Hopefully that's where you do your real estating. Check it out, mbrealestate.com. They're in Chicago. They're very helpful. Take a different approach, so check that out. This is my interview with John Dillon, the CEO of Guardian Vets. I'm just going to assume that, like myself and like most people who, I didn't adopt a dog, or I have a dog. I didn't adopt it. I went to the shelter because I got a Bazenji, and I'm told that Bazenjis are like the worst possible starting pooch, and they're like even worse yet if you adopt them. But I assume, like many other people, when you adopted your first pet, it was a complete handful and a bunch of expenses that you absolutely,
oh yeah,
you know, it's like you get a kid coming on the way and you're like, I've heard from friends, I assume that this is expensive.
Well, I've heard it's good training, actually.
Yeah, well, it's
assuming the responsibility
in that regard, but yeah. Like I expect kids to bring a cost. Dog, I'm definitely not thinking I need a daily babysitter. I can tell you that much, which it turned out to be the case.
Right.
So it's just interesting. So tell me kind of how you started, how you got into the pet world.
Yeah. So about 3 years ago, I adopted my puppy, Patrick. So, you know, my guy's a boxer bloodhound. And if you know anything about boxers, super energetic, bloodhounds, super stubborn.
Yeah.
And, you know, during the day, I was at work, right? Much like you have a dog, but where is he right now? He's either at daycare or he's at home. And when I was with him at night or on the weekends, if something came up, I would end up calling the veterinary practice and finding out I would just get like a voicemail and said, sorry, we're closed. Leave a message or go to the emergency room. And so there's three instances that happened to me. One of which is, you know, we were running around outside and he slipped on ice during the weekend and he cut up the underside of his belly and he's crying in pain and I don't know what to do, and I don't know if I can put Neosporin on it and wait to be seen or if I have to go to the emergency room immediately. And so ended up going to the emergency room. You have to drive out there, spend a ton of money, and find out it's not an emergency.
Yeah.
There was another time he was chewing on a, you know, his pig's ears, like chewables.
Yeah.
And, you know, he chews it down to a certain size and just swallows it whole.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, is this thing going to get stuck in his stomach? Is it going to pass
and
through?
And it's all like splintered and stuff now. So like, you're literally thinking like, this could be bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you don't know what to do. And you're stuck in this position, at least in my case at that time, looking at your bank account thinking, oh my God, can I afford an emergency room visit? And is this necessary? And I thought, you know, there's got to be a better solution for pet owners out there that have concerns after hours, but have no one to talk to. And so we thought, well, how can we, you know, engineer a solution to allow pet owners to have access to care after hours through their primary practice? And wouldn't it be amazing if you're a pet owner and you can have access to that care for free?
Yep.
And so that's how we got about started with Guardian Vets.
So your background, I mean, like, I feel like, and it's so funny, like, I've heard, maybe close to 1,000 different companies and pitches and things in my time now, but, like, I'm still surprised every single time when I hear somebody who's, like, not from that background who, like, jumps into something. And there's, like, a few areas where, to me, it's logical. Like, I've said this numerous times. To me, when I see traders who get into the restaurant industry, it doesn't, like, that's not a surprise to me.
Right.
Everything is about numbers and crunching and efficiency and at volume. Like, it just makes sense. Anything that operates in, like, a really low margin, to me, attracts people who are high risk. Like, that's just the way it is. But that are not averse to risk, I should say.
Right.
When I look at pet, we've had, you know, FIGO insurance. We've had a few on here. They're usually not people who are from the pet world. And I'm like, that's one where I feel like you almost have to know something, but maybe not. Maybe it's an advantage to come in cold. What was your background prior to this?
So my background was in finance. So project finance, predominantly investment banking. So I was a transport sector specialist. I was just talking about this outside.
Yeah.
You know,
we put bankers strategically placed around all of our guests so that if, just in case you're one of the 70% of founders who are either a trader or finance investment banker, that you'll have someone to be comfortable with.
Yeah, and you can talk shop. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a strategic decision.
So, I mean, there's an element of that that really teaches you, you know, financial modeling and how to look at things very carefully from a due diligence perspective. But, I think with regards to risk taking, there's an element of that, but there's also an element of just like grit. Where even if you don't know so much about the industry, you just have to kind of grind it out. And fortunately, I think the ridiculous work hours that I started off with translated into entrepreneurship, where you're just putting in heavy duty hours. I will say that not having been from the industry previously, some things you're naive to that work as a benefit, because had you known how difficult it's going to be,
you probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think that's the advantage that a lot of founders have when they're not from the background of whatever it is that they're in. But then, like, that's why I say, like, pet is one of those things where there are certain, like, do's and don'ts and just, like, known things. Like, that's just a known, like, that's just, dogs only live 7 years. Like, you want a charge to put an IV in. Like, that's just a thing. Like, you don't have to treat them like humans, even though we as pet owners naturally are like inclined to be humane. I've noticed, and this is kind of like dovetailing into the conversation about Guardian, that there's a little bit of an inhumaneness, not in a mean way, but like, you're not intended to be that way, but there's a sort of a science approach that I see a lot of vets take, which is that they're going to price you up based on all of these different things that in a natural sense you'd be like, well, I would have assumed that you would have treated my dog like a human being, but that's because I'm stupid and I'm an owner.
That's a really hot topic with, you know, pricing in the industry and the affordability of care. And so we kind of try to touch both on affordability and access to care.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why I initially said, like, Guardian Vets is free to pet owners. So to kind of explain the business model and how
it operates. Yeah, I mean, why don't we do that? Why don't we talk into, I mean, you can say, I guess, just start off with, like, what exactly is Guardian Vets, like, from a top down? And then let's talk a little bit more about how it works and the fundamentals of the problem it solves. Because, you know, normally in these stories, like, I'll find somewhere in there is this, like, burning thing that is about you that is, like, identifiable in the company. And like, I try, the fascinating thing for me, a lot of shows, like, there's, like, how you built this, and, like, there's all these different shows. What I find fascinating is when I can identify this thing about you, and it's, like, that very clearly in the company.
In the company, so, first, with the high-level thing, so we're a B2B telehealth company, platform, as well as a service that allows pet owners to have access to care after hours through their own veterinary practice for free.
Yep.
And so the way that we kind of make this business model work is if you call in with a question about your pet, let's say it's vomiting, let's say it has diarrhea, let's say it has a potential toxic ingestion or just had a seizure, and you're concerned, you don't know what's going on, right now, any practice here in Chicago, chances are you're going to get a voicemail that says, sorry, we're closed, leave a message, or go to the ER. And if you call the ER, yep, they're going to tell you to come in immediately.
Of course.
Right? So the problem is that as a pet owner, you're not medically trained. You don't know what's going on with that pet. Yep. You don't know if it's an emergency or not, and the pet doesn't talk. And biologically, it's predisposed not to show you pain.
Yep.
So you really have a hard time interpreting what's going on. So what you do as a pet owner is just call your practice as per normal, and our team of doctors and nurses will pick up and help you understand what's going on. Is this really an emergency? In which case, we'll send you right to the ER. And if it's not, we'll help you schedule an appointment with your practice for the next business day.
Yep.
And the whole process is seamless. You have no idea really that we exist. We operate behind the scenes through and on behalf of the veterinary practices and enable them to offer continuous care for their own clients.
Very
so
cool.
They're the ones that are paying us a subscription.
So one of the questions that I would have, and we can start diving into the model of this, but sure, like one of the questions that I have in this is, you know, we've had insurance, those that are trying to disrupt the insurance, you know, model just for humans.
Yep.
And one of the things that comes across is like, it seems, and I guess this is less about insurance and more about the medical field, but it like the average Joe seems to think for many legitimate reasons that doctors and insurance agencies and so forth and hospitals jack prices up and try to make this like as difficult and in hoop jumping as possible because that's how they profit.
Yeah.
And I try to explain to people on a regular basis, and I'm not like, I have no dog in the race in this particular case, that's not actually the case. Like they would rather not do that. It would be much simpler to just be able to say like, this is what this costs. This, you know, it's much easier to figure out a profit model when there's not so many variables. They don't want to do it. It just is this way.
So affordability is a very real issue in the industry, and I think we're part of that solution.
The question I had was like, in the end, it's like, is that the same for vets? Because in my mind,
it definitely is.
Because that people, to me is interesting and fascinating. Because mm-hmm, I think the average person, I don't think they like I was saying, I don't think that it's the doctors and the hospital's fault for humans, but I do think it, or I thought it, that it was the fault of the vets, because I think it's like a racket that they were doing. But now I don't. And right, like, and you're telling me that it is similar to the human version. And
I think
that makes sense.
There's similarities and there's differences. I think, you know, the similarity is that, you know, the cost of care keeps on rising.
Yep.
The differences tend to be that veterinary practices, the industry is a lot more fragmented than human healthcare. So they tend to operate a lot more like mom and pop shops where they don't have those economies of scale, that purchasing power,
yep,
that can drive costs down. You don't have the development of the insurance market like you do in the human healthcare system. So the pet owner has to bear the entire cost usually. So there's differences. And I think, you know, there needs to be better evolution in how inventory and certain cost drivers in the practices are managed. That being said, the veterinarians that I've met are like salts of the earth people, like amazing, hardworking. Yep. They love what they do. And they're really trying to do right by the clients and by the pets. So the way that we fit into this equation is by making after hour access free,
yep,
for the pet owners. And so the way that you monetize it as a practice is that we believe that better customer service is better business. And so if you're able to talk to a doctor or a nurse after hours for free, we believe that you're going to be calling your veterinary practice more often.
Yep.
And that's going to translate into more appointments. That's going to translate into being able to capture new clients. That's going to be able to, you know, translate into the practice raising exam fees by a dollar or two. And the client's going to be really happy with that because they have better access to care. So, you know, in our small way, we're part of the solution.
Sure.
But so are wellness plans. So is insurance. So are other elements that can kind of help.
So we had a startup on recently called Pediasource, which in my mind does very similar.
Hema. Yeah,
Hema.
Yeah.
Very similar situation, but for children.
Mm-hmm.
And and one of the things that, now this is not the case for Hema, but you said you play a small part in this, and I think that there's a bigger part that you play actually. That I don't know if you're the cause or if you're the result. I'm not certain. But the pet industry, so like, people listening, pardon this, and my wife especially. Children and animals are the same to me, like at a certain point.
Especially with level of responsibility, and they're just, yeah.
I love them to death.
I know exactly what you mean.
They don't talk. They cry and scream. They're a pain in my ass most of the time, but they make me laugh and sleep better at night.
Yeah.
And they like, and also there's nothing worse in this world than, and I don't mean to minimize this, but like losing a child, I cannot imagine, but losing a pet is not easy. Like it's even sometimes harder than humans, because you develop a non-communicative, like verbal communicative relationship that you feel like they understand you, and that emotional attachment is deeper. Right. And so forever with elderly, forever with regular aged humans, the system has been very sophisticated. You speak the language, I speak a language, I have an expertise, you have a problem, I'm here to solve it. Fill out this paperwork, the insurance agent, like the insurance is there, we're here to make it more comfortable for you. Like it's very sophisticated. And when you have something very sophisticated, it just operates more seamlessly. It's more transparent. There's more opportunities for improvements, blah, 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 blah. For children and for animals, that has not been the case. It has not been sophisticated. It's people telling parents who have never had a kid before this age what the hell is going on.
Right.
And they're lost and they're freaking out and they're making bad decisions under pressure, which people are terrible at in any circumstance, let alone their own child. And the same is for animals. And there's been this ability to take advantage of people in some regards, or to like overserve, because like you mentioned, a lot of the veterinarians are pet lovers to the nth degree.
Right.
And so they literally like, cost be damned, I just want to take care of you. So what I'm getting at here is a company like yourself, which by the way, you're a Chicago Innovation Award winner. So there's your proof positive that,
thank you,
that you guys know what you're doing. You have come into this market. And like I said, I don't know if you drive it or if you're a result, but either way, it's good. You bring a new level of sophistication like HEMA does to childcare.
Right.
To where somebody needs to be my interpreter. Somebody needs to explain to me whether or not I should be doing this and freaking out, or I should be like totally cool Joe.
Right.
And I think that as you start to continue to grow Guardian Vets, continue to provide education and let's say experience to the user, they're experiencing the ebb and flow of being a pet owner, and being able to remove worry and let them know when there's time to spend and when it makes sense. You open up the opportunity for insurance companies to step in like FIGO and provide better insurance policies and more better cost structure.
Right.
And then as a result, because they now can control the cost structure, they enable the veterinarians to determine, okay, so we're only going to get this, so we really have to be a little bit more cautious. You are in a lot of ways, in a reverse engineered way, providing more sophistication to the entire system, which I think is why you're a Chicago Innovation Award winner.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's a very long-winded way of saying congratulations, but like, I just think it's very fascinating.
Yeah, and we're trying to approach it from the perspective of bonding the client more closely to the practice and allowing the point of contact to be the practice. We're not trying to disrupt the veterinary industry in any way.
Yep.
We're just helping the practice provide better service for its clients. So, you know, for all the pet owners out there that may be listening, if this is, you know, if you find yourself with an issue after hours, please reach out to your practice, go to our Facebook page and tag your veterinary hospital and let them know that this is a service that you want.
Yep.
Because from their point of view, they need work-life balance. They're working their butts off during the day and they can't be expected to be available 24/7. And that's where that, you know, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They want to provide better service, but they can't do it personally themselves. And that's where we've been able to step in and kind of improve that.
What are the next opportunities for you guys to grow? Because I think like this is the part of the conversation that is very much like HEMO, where it's like, you know, the opportunity is obvious, but you need to develop things that people don't know to ask yet, because it has to happen for them to be like, oh shit, what do I do?
Right. So you're kind we've gotten, fortunately, a fair amount of traction since we started in, you know, February of 2017. So we're in over 100 hospitals across the U.S. and over 32 states, serving over 600,000 pet owners already. We've got a partnership with the American Animal Hospital Association, which is like one of the premier associations of veterinary hospitals across the U.S. We're about to get backed by a large corporate in the pet space, which is an honor for us.
Yeah.
And it's going to open up a lot of distribution channels. So we're really excited about that. But we're kind of at a stage right now where we're redeveloping our technology and looking not only at after hours as one isolated issue, but looking at building a unified client communication system,
yep,
expanding beyond just phones, but chat and video, and kind of building in this omni-channel solution that's going to integrate seamlessly into the practice where we can pull up your pet's medical records in real time. We'll see your case history. We'll be able to build more comprehensive triage support software and a lot of things that I'm doing on my medical staff side to optimize what they're doing. So that's what we're building next. And that's really what's the next stage for us and keeping us excited.
So you mentioned the 600,000, you said 600,000 pet owners, right?
Yeah.
I got to ask, like how did, this is, you've not been around that long. Like how did you?
It's a lot of work.
But like, how, I mean, strategically as a CEO, like how are you, how have you been able to do this? Like how are you, I mean, obviously I can give the secret sauce away, but like, a lot of people try to jump and start a company and like getting clients and partnerships is tough.
One at a time. I remember our first client was, you know, in the suburb Barrington Animal Hospital. Yep. I'm forever grateful for them. I had to show up with donuts and, you know, do the standard cold
donuts go a long way.
Crazy things that you have to do to get your first few clients and, you know, sometimes give it away for free for the first few months so they can try it out and see the value. But once they start seeing the value, and once you start getting the feedback from pet owners that, hey, I had an issue at 3 a.m. and someone picked up, thank you so much, to help me understand what's going on, that's priceless, right? And the brand value that brings to the practice and keeping the client happy, once you start getting that sort of feedback, word spreads organically. So then it becomes less of having to go out to market to bring people in and managing the inbound demand.
Yep.
So that's, you know, it's just been a lot of word of mouth and us just putting our heads down and focus on executing.
When I look at like the sales cycle, it's funny you mentioned that, because it's like, I can think of multiple times in my career where you get the first couple sales, it feels like you're going to get it. Then you get there and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that like we got this one. It's huge. It's Barrington. And then it's like, you get another and another and you're sort of like,
yeah, I remember when we were at like 15 hospitals, I said, oh my God, I can't, how are we going to manage 15 hospitals?
And you get lost at that certain point, you get lost, the next thing you turn around, there's 100 of them, you're like, Jesus, like we have,
it's crazy. Now we're trying to scale up to get to 1,000, and at every stage, you kind of go through a phase evolution, and you kind of hit a critical point where you just, you know, everything seems like it's about to break down, and all of a sudden you break through, and you get to a different level.
So what is, I want to ask you, like, is if I could take a quote, what? Sure. What is that moment? Like, what is that thing that you do when you know you're approaching that? So like you're at 100 sales, we're approaching 115, or I'm sorry, you know, partnerships, we're at 115, you know, approaching 120, can start to feel the wall shake a little bit. What do you do right there where you're like, I have two things I need to accomplish as a team. One, we need to figure out how to optimize what we're doing right now and prepare for scale later. And then the second thing is I need to figure out, what is a legitimate benchmark for us to look at? Again, in this case, you said 1,000. What does that look like for you? How do you do that?
We just look at our metrics and just, you know, I don't have an easy answer for this because we haven't scaled up to a huge, huge corporation.
Sure.
But what I've found is that it's about really intense communication with your own team to identify where the breakdowns are and where you quickly need to add new resources and start to improve things.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, when you do, cause like I look at it, I'm obsessive about like unit economics.
Yeah.
So like, I love looking into, I'm just going to look at your own business at this case. I love looking at that going, okay, so at a hundred partners, each one of them makes X dollars to us.
Yeah. We're fanatical about our metrics and then what the ROI is.
Yeah. So you've got that, but then you've also got like the people that
on
it requires to
side,
operate
and,
like,
and
what
how
they
we're
cost.
Actually servicing our clients and how many seconds it takes to pick up a call and how long it takes for a consultation to actually happen, for the documentation to actually go through. And then, you know, how often our hospitals are looking at the analytics and what they're doing with the information and how they're marketing into their own clients and all of that. You know, I kind of have my own little dashboard that I look at, and, you know, when things are going wrong, the lights are flashing and I zero in on that and figure out what needs to happen to fix it. But part of the solution is also learning how to let go as an individual. And I was just talking about this outside and bringing the right resources in place and people that are better than you in certain things that can help take that load off you so you can focus on what your core competency is. If I focus on every little component of the business, I'm just going to be mediocre.
Your brain will explode.
Your brain will explode, but you'll kind of be like mediocre at everything.
Yep.
So you need to focus on like what you're really great at or what you're passionate about, and then bring other people on board that can help you with the other things so you can collectively like raise your game.
No, I totally agree. Like I've said this many times on the show. I've preached this to companies that we work with for years now. I think the lesson that I can tell you 1,000 times, but you'll never learn it until you're in the spot. And if you do learn it, you have a chance to become an innovation award winner. If you don't learn it, maybe you'll learn it next time. I don't know. Yeah. And you just kind of said it, which is the point is, it doesn't matter who you are, or how powerful you can be. Jeff Bezos, we were talking about him earlier today. Like, you could be him.
Right.
Jeff Bezos is only as successful as the people that he puts around him, and the people that when he understands he needs to put someone around him.
And the process that he built.
Correct.
You know? And you look at if you can look him up, there's photos of him when he was in a dingy little office.
Yeah.
When Amazon was just starting. And, you know, he looked awful.
He tells you, he's still playing the same. He still has the same business plan. He's still operating.
It's amazing. So, you just have to learn how to build processes and systems and teams and kind of learn how to bring the best out of people. And just realize that, you know, a team, if you do it right, the collective can be greater than the sum of the parts, you know, if you bring the best out of people. So
is it fair to say that maybe I found what I was looking for in this conversation with you, in that as a person who was part of a global infrastructure projects team, managed to build this company by essentially taking the approach of, we're going to find a solution to deliver to you, and I'm going to find a way to master how it's delivered to you unit by unit.
You mean the unit economics,
yeah,
like brick by brick?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's life has this weird way of, sometimes you don't know exactly where it's taking you, but yep, then you look backwards and you see everything that kind of happened in the past and you see that path lining up. And in my case, I think building infrastructure definitely helped, whether it's in the physical arena, in transportation, or in the technology, yeah, and service arena, you know, it's the same thing. It's systems and it's brick by brick.
Yep. I say it all the time. People ask me, and they look at the LinkedIn, they're like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
And I'm like, honestly, I was in the commercial real estate space and I looked at the startup community and it looked to me like properties.
To have a separate discussion about Chicago commercial or real estate, because
that's a whole other conversation that we can have. I need to have producer Sam set this up for us. This should be the first one you start with. We've got about 12, at least 12, probably 20. Guests who in the show somewhere along the line, like, we should have a separate conversation about this. We need to actually have these separate conversations, because it'd be our best shows is to have you. So we'll do that. I'll make sure to make a note of this so that Sam calls you. We want to have you back on, and we're going to talk about absolutely nothing of importance to anyone except for us. And you people listening, well, you can just hit skip, because this is for us. We can listen to it. It'll be cheap therapy, if it will.
Sounds good.
John, this has been a total pleasure to have you here. Where do people go to learn more about Guardian Vets and keep up with whatever you and your company are doing?
Yeah, our website is guardianvets.com. And if you're a pet owner, again, I encourage you to please visit our Facebook and tag your veterinary hospital.
Very cool. So I'm going to let you go. But before that, are you down for a little startup showcase?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you don't know what it is, but you just said yes, which is good enough for me. Throw your headphones on.
Okay.
And the gist of this is, and those of you listening, you get the gist. You've been through this before, but there's a slight change. We're partnered with a company called Micro Ventures. They're Austin-based. They've had about $180 million run through their platform. Companies like 23andMe, SpaceX, SoFi, Ripple, other ones that you have heard of, Uber, Slack, big companies. They have raised money through equity crowdfunding from accredited investors. They also enable people who are unaccredited, meaning you're not a millionaire, to invest in startups just like these companies were before they became who they are now. One of those such companies is called Jubal. They call in and they're going to give us a pitch. John, you and I are going to listen to a 1-minute pitch of this company, and then you and I are going to determine whether or not we would invest our own money in this.
Okay.
Does this sound good to you?
Sound good.
All right. With that said, a little startup showcase.
So basically, Jubal democratizes the luxury of affording a travel advisor by offering personalized multi-destination tours without the expensive planning fees. Our trips are basically focused on experiential travel, which is essentially experiencing the cultural and natural attractions of destinations that haven't been influenced by mass tourism. These sort of trips are on the rise. It's actually a $450 billion market. But the problem is that these trips are extremely difficult to plan if you can't afford a luxury travel advisor to help you. In fact, people that try to self-plan these trips spend on average over 23 hours researching and visit travel sites over 140 times. So basically, our platform solves this problem by allowing anyone to easily plan trips to over 100 countries. All our destinations have been vetted to ensure unforgettable experiences, and travelers simply have to input their preferences and budget and we'll immediately match them to their ideal trips, which are 100% customizable, so they can keep tweaking until they're happy, and then they can go ahead and book everything that they need through our platform.
All right. So I'm going to set the opportunity for people here just as a clarity, and John, I'm sure as a entrepreneur, you probably already keep up with a lot of this stuff. To me, this is like Total Recall. Like, I don't know if you ever, not the shitty one with what's his name, Colin, whatever, Will, whatever, Farrell, the one with Arnold, the one that matters, where you literally can go in, and in this case, you actually get to go on the trip, but in Total Recall, you just like pick your imagination and they put it in your brain. But the idea here is that millennials don't want to do any work on their own. Travel agencies are expensive and basically old people stuff. So if I wanted to go to Rome, it would have been nice to have everything set up for me when I got there, and I had all the guides and the rides and things in from the airport and everything set. It's sort of a digitization of travel agencies. And what I think is interesting in this case, that is the opportunity, is the technology that if they get the data right and the what we all want to do with our day and time, they can organize it exceptionally fast so that we get there and we just get the experience we wished we would have had. It's all preset. That said, there was several years ago, a lot of money was invested from mainstream investors into the travel world because the infrastructure for data and application wasn't quite ready yet. It kind of shit out. But now literally $1 billion is being invested in travel technology again. So it's a hot topic. That is the opportunity that is out there for you listening. John, operator to operator, what are you thinking?
I think
he just folded his arms.
You know, I was thinking about their business plan, and it seems to me like they're thinking about going direct to consumer. That might be a challenge with the incumbents, with Expedia and Orbitz and the big players out there. So maybe if they have some sort of proprietary tech that helps optimize your trip, maybe they can even sell or license that to the incumbents rather than trying to compete with them.
You are a smart man. We're on the same page, because I was looking at this and going, like, I have a little inside information in this world.
Yeah.
And a lot of those that, let's just put it this way, those agents, B2C agents that continue to exist that have not been crushed by Expedia are those that have switched over to the human side of B2B organization. So Walmart has hundreds of thousands of people that they're moving back and forth, and those people want to land and know what the hell to do.
Right.
And so I think that there's either the tech for license play, or there's taking the same approach and understanding that a B2B traveler is the same as a B2C traveler when you scrape away everything. It's a matter of time, not a matter of what you did with your time.
Right.
So question there is, like, in this, would you, I'm not asking you to, but would you invest in this or in something like this? If not, why not?
I would be interested to hear more about their solution and what their go-to-market is and what their tech is to help you plan that trip.
Okay.
How is that different than just going on Google and picking things and individually selecting? How does it?
So for those of you listening, I will tell you how you can do that. You go to microventures.com/crowdfund, and then it's let me say that one more time. app.microventures.com/crowdfund/Jubel, J-U-B-E-L, and you literally can explore the term sheet. You can explore some of the tech. They don't obviously tell you the part you want to know. But here's the catch, John. You can invest for like $100. So you can put $100 in, or $1,000 or whatever, and actually you get a taste of it. And then who knows? Maybe we'll have them on our stage at a showcase. You can meet with them and make a bigger investment. But hopefully you enjoyed playing the game. I enjoy having founders sit here and listen to other pitches, because usually it's you pitching trying to get money, and this is a little different.
It's an experience hearing it from the other point of view. So,
and then cool. And I think a lot of them will listen to the show and then they call me. I'm like, hey, is there a way that we can set up like a consultation on what I pitched, how to do better with it? So if you do have any, I mean, this pitch was sort of, we did some editing on it, so it's not a fair pitch, but what is something that you think that all entrepreneurs should make sure that they include in any pitch that they tell anyone, even if it's just a minute?
The clear solution and the value proposition.
Boom. Totally agree with you. John, thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Thank you.
Of course, you can learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities, and check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify or wherever it is you get your podcast. Follow us on social at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.